Hi, it's Tim Dre, president of the Illinois AFL-CIO. Thank you for listening to The Worker's Mic, supported by the Illinois AFL-CIO, fighting every day for working families. Visit ilafl-cio.org today. Enjoy the show, and remember, it's better in a union.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to The Worker's Mic, right here on 720 WGN. We're sponsored by the National Coalition of Labor. And I am Ed Maher with the NCL, and joining me here is Phil Davidson from the Mid-America Carpenters Regional Council. Happy Sunday, Phil.
Happy Sunday. Good to be back in the saddle.
It is. You know, we really missed you last week. It wasn't the same here without you.
Mm-mm, and never is.
I heard a little story that we were not the only ones who missed you last week.
Yes.
Here in the studio.
Yeah, so I just want to clarify for the record, I was not golfing. Okay?
I know. Ken says everyone's golfing.
You know, my bosses do listen to the show, so I was actually had a child who was sick, so I had to take care of her.
Got to do it.
I was being a good, responsible father.
But you got some funny feedback.
Yes. I got a voicemail immediately after the show from my mother.
Yeah.
Big fan of the show.
Yeah.
Loyal listener. And she said, I'm going to read the transcription of the voicemail. Hi, Phil. I just wondered if everything's okay. You weren't on the Worker's Mic this morning. Maybe you're out of town. I hope you didn't quit. Bye.
I love it. So clearly you don't communicate very much with your parents, Phil.
No.
This is like a one-way, this is their weekly check-in to make sure that you're still
alive. If I'm not on the Worker's Mic, something is up. All and right. I love how right away she went to, well, maybe out of town, or you probably just quit.
Because
we know your track record. You're a quitter in life.
You don't strike me as a quitter.
I'm not a quitter. I stick it out.
So, Mrs. Davidson, it's important that you know.
Yes.
First off, thanks for listening, Mrs. Davidson.
Yes, and thanks for catching that. But no, I called her right away. I said, no, Mom, I had a little situation at home, so I couldn't make it, but we're all good.
Well, I'm going to give you a good piece of advice that my mom used to give me and still does. Call your mother.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Right, I do. We talk fairly often, but this is a sign that not quite often enough.
Well, we're all glad that you're okay and that you didn't
quit,
Phil.
Yes, I'm good. Thank you.
Ken, on the other hand, will not be with us today.
Interesting.
Do you know all where right. Ken is?
Take that, Ken.
Ken was doing a bunch of traveling over the past week, doing
sure
coalition
was.
Stuff up in Wisconsin
sure
and everywhere.
Was.
So,
do you have receipts on that?
I don't collect receipts on anything. So, no, I don't. He might be golfing. So, Ken's not here, and I think this is actually really funny because every week Ken wants to give an update on a certain story, and you and I will generally talk him out of it. It's the Boeing story where, for I think 3 months now, they've been out on strike.
Yes.
The workers who assemble F-15s and missile systems. This has been going on for 3 months, and we've reported on it many times. Some weeks there just aren't any updates.
Yeah, it's kind of turn of the screw.
So we have to tell Ken, like, let's touch on it when there's an update. And Ken's not here, but this is all resolved now, so it brings me great joy to report that the Boeing workers on Thursday voted to approve.
They did, finally.
They did, a new contract. They are going to have a pay increase of, I want to say over the course of like a 4 or 5 year contract, it's going to be like 26%, something like that. It's a good increase. It brings the median pay of their mechanics down there to over $100,000 a year, which if anybody's turning your nose up, just remember they're building F-15s, they're building
yes.
missile systems. When you need these things, you want them to work.
Exactly.
You want to have capable people working on them. So,
yes.
To me, at least, this is one of those jobs where,
you want people with expertise.
And there are people all up and down the military-industrial complex that are getting disgustingly wealthy, and that has just been the case for decades.
Yeah.
And, so it should
all the CEOs.
It shouldn't be a problem
all
for
the defense contractors.
For the people
yes.
who build the stuff to make what
right.
would amount to a good middle class living.
Wow. How did Boeing? What was their comment after the agreement was signed? Of
they look they forward finally, to having everybody back at work.
Okay.
They, one thing
were they complaining about the contract, or did they say
no? Okay. I think the thing that there was a push there at the end where. The union put together its own proposal and had its employees
that was
vote
great.
On it.
That was great.
It was like a sweetheart dream deal. And I think one of the only things that got knocked out of that was there was like a $10,000 ratification bonus
mm-hmm.
to be paid to all these employees, and Boeing knocked it down to 6. But when they came to this agreement, Boeing or the union emphatically encouraged all of its members to vote in favor of this thing. Yeah. I didn't see the percentage. I don't know if they released the percentage of people who voted to approve it, but they said that it was strong approval from the members. So they're going back to work, I think, starting yesterday, maybe. Now, the one thing I didn't get a ton of clarity on was whether or not they were going to get rid of all these strike breakers and scabs who they brought in over the past 3 months to do this.
I don't see how they could afford to.
Yeah, I mean, they've got to get rid of
them. Who are you going to bring in?
Yeah, they got to get rid of those people. At least not withhold a job from anybody who was on
strike. Oh, the strike breakers. Excuse me. I thought you said they were trying to get rid of the strikers.
No. Yeah. No. Oh,
that'd be horrible.
The strikers are coming back. They were former strikers.
Yes, but then they say they were going to lay off a lot of the striking workers.
There were threats like that during it, and that's kind of what I'm getting at, is they said for people who have been replaced, we'll put you on like a list, you know, a keep your application on file list, but you know, there's no guarantees here.
No.
So I'm looking for some more clarification, and I haven't gotten it yet.
Breakers, go back to the ninth circle of hell where they came from. Yes.
go back in your holes.
Yes.
And don't show yourselves again for a very, very long time.
Yeah, but Boeing's got nothing to worry about. We keep adding to our defense budget, so we're going to keep building planes. I think their bottom line will be just fine if they pay people a living wage.
Man, yes. I don't know. I've always lived under the assumption that our military stuff is the best there is, and I sure hope I'm right. I'll tell you what, I hope we never find out.
Right, exactly.
You know? But yeah, so we've got a big show today. We don't have any guests coming in the studio, but there's a lot going on. And out of Washington, we're going to spend some time after the break here talking about a group of proposed laws that came out of Congress here in the past week or so that would completely sort of update federal labor law. In ways that are bad
for... Not in a good way.
Yeah, not good for workers.
Not in a good way.
They have really nice names, really positive names.
They do.
But we are going to get into that. We're going to do a little bit of a deep dive in the next segment so that everybody can understand kind of what is going on in Washington. Because after, you know, going after whatever groups of people over the past few months, Congress is starting to take a closer look at workers, and they
not just federal workers.
Either. No. You know, workers organizing, collective bargaining. It's all in the crosshairs, and we're going to get into that just after the break. So stay with us, and we will be right back with you after these words with the Workers' Mic on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN. I'm Ed Maher here with Phil Davidson, and we're going to do a little bit of a deep dive, Phil, here in this next segment.
I love a deep dive.
Yeah, me too. There's been a couple of iterations, you know, over the last 100 or so years.
Yeah.
Initially, there was the National Labor Relations Act.
Just that was pro-worker.
Passed. Very pro-worker, because at that time, there was a lot of industrial strife with pickets and riots and shootings and, you know, cops beating striking
Pinkertons.
Workers. Exactly. So it was the Wild West, and I think folks realized it had to get back to some sort of predictable, stable, peaceful kind of a thing for
Congress.
This is
going back to the 30s, I believe?
Right.
Yeah, okay.
So the labor policy, the idea of labor in the United States was not to permit collective bargaining. It was to encourage collective bargaining because it created stability and allowed businesses to, you know, be more predictable, commerce to grow, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then about, 30 years later, 25 years later, they passed some amendments to this that were far more harsh on workers, limited toward workers.
More business friendly.
Yeah, and sort of pointed against unions, you know, with a lot more penalties for union employees and leaders and stuff like that. So it seems like all of this stuff has been largely untouched for, you know, decades, since, the 50s or 60s.
Yeah.
And
give or take.
Yeah. So now there's been some little stuff here and there.
Right. Because there's control of the NLRB changes. And
yeah. A lot of the policies that have changed within the NLRB as opposed to, you know, through large
on the statutory level.
Right. So they're taking a crack at some more laws. It was Senator Bill Cassidy out of Louisiana who proposed a slew of new worker, what do you call it? He said they're worker-friendly bills, and they're well-named.
They are. They're disguised as pro-worker bills. Yes,
there are six of them. We're going to run through each one of them briefly because it is important. We want to do a couple of things here. First off, it's sort of just to encourage all of our listeners, when you hear a name of a bill, look into it a little bit deeper to see what it actually is, because sometimes they put lipstick on a pig. And that's not just in labor legislation. That's in everything. And then we just want to kind of explain what the move of this Congress and potentially this administration are toward toward workers, toward union. These bills that we're going to run through really quick, they have all been supported by the National Right to Work Foundation, Americans for Prosperity, which was run by the previously alive Koch brothers. I think there's one left, but they are sort of the example of the most pro-business, anti-worker, anti-environment, like libertarian, let's make money kind of groups. So they've endorsed these. So let's get into this. The first one that we're going to talk about is the Worker Results Act. So basically what this does is, the way that it works right now, if a group of workers want a union, they have an election that's, you know, overseen by the National Labor Relations Board. And if 50% plus one, if a majority of the workers vote for the union, then they get a union. It's certified.
Of whoever votes in that particular election.
Right. Okay. And you can also get what's called voluntary recognition. So if an employer is not opposed to having a union, they can just say, okay, you have a majority of employees that are showing interest in this. I'll do voluntary recognition. You have a union. It doesn't happen very often, but the Worker Results Act would do away with that.
Okay.
And it would require that in any union election, 2/3 of the employees would have to vote for that majority to be sufficient.
Okay.
They've done stuff like this in Wisconsin. And basically, what you can see this as is just, it's a way to stop people who want unions from being able to get one.
Right. It's making almost impossible hurdle. Because depending on a bargaining union, they can be dispersed, like, to make sure that you have 2/3 of everyone who's eligible voting is difficult. Look at U.S. elections.
Right.
We never get 2/3 of people voting.
For sure. And, and an employer now could do, instead of just saying vote against the union, they just tell people don't vote.
Yeah.
Like, this is just don't vote on this. They have another sort of path to victory. So what this is ultimately is, it takes the process of workers who want a union getting one, and it makes it harder. It gives you fewer ways to get there and more speed bumps to get there. In a time where, you know, public polling and all the data that we see shows that people want unions.
Overwhelming support.
Yeah. It's making union elections more tricky. And, you know, if a union is certified and then is perceived to be acting or negotiating in bad faith, it opens up a 90-day decertification period. There's nothing in there about employers acting in bad faith, like say Starbucks.
Oh yeah.
So this Worker Results Act, they're trying to make it harder for workers to use a democratic process to certify a union.
Shameful.
So next up, Protection on the Picket Line Act. So on a picket line, you know, striking and picketing are both what's called protected concerted activity under the National Labor Relations Act. You're allowed to do these things.
It's First Amendment right.
Free speech.
Yes.
Exactly. So now what employers would be able to do is discipline employees who are on strike for any things that they would consider harassment or abusive. So any kind of like negative speech about company leaders or the company's position toward its workers, which are currently protected under the First Amendment.
Yes.
This would be a law that would add a layer in there where it's no longer free speech.
So you just have to show up to the picket line and say nothing. You can say nothing about your employer.
Yeah, signs, chants, any of that kind of stuff. In an era where First Amendment is sort of always being expanded, like companies are people.
Yeah, what happened to free speech?
Free speech means companies can spend as much money as they want. Free speech is being expanded, except in this case, and you know, cases like this where
I thought Elon Musk is a free speech absolutist.
You know, I don't know.
At all costs.
I think that was that time that he was really high on ketamine.
Oh, my
maybe
been.
Now is that time that he's high on ketamine.
And that was that.
Allegedly.
Yeah, allegedly, right. And that bill was introduced by Alabama Senator Tommy Tuberville.
Yeah, he got voted because football.
Yes, football is
that
a thing.
Was his campaign,
and he wasn't even a very successful football coach. But this guy, man, I don't want to cast aspersions.
Vote Tommy because football. Also, it worked.
Also, the same guy who just said that New York City is now a majority Muslim city, which is nowhere near accurate.
Well,
but that's where his head is right now.
All right. So the next one is Fairness in Filing Act. So one of the things that happens right now that workers, if your rights are violated on the job, you or your union can file an unfair labor practice charge, right? And they investigate it, and if the employer is found to have violated your rights, they take steps to rehire you, pay you back pay, whatever, to give you recourse for whatever the violation was. So what this does is it restricts the things that you can file unfair labor practices for, requires more and more and more physical evidence. And if you don't file it, presenting all the evidence that they want to get a determination, they can fine you. They can fine you $5,000 for filing an unfair labor practice charge without the appropriate evidence. Like, the point of the investigation is to find all of the evidence.
Right.
You have to file with, a level of certainty that these things have occurred. You have to file affidavits from people who've seen it, that kind of stuff. But they're just, now it's taking your recourse when your rights have been violated, making it harder to make a case that that's happened. So,
and this fine can be levied against the workers individually, not against their union?
Toward anybody who files an unfair labor practice charge. So typically, wow, Unions do that,
right.
But workers are also able to do that.
They're also party to it.
So far, we got three laws and three proposals. And
three strikes.
We have restricted elections. We have restricted unfair labor practice charges, and we are restricting free speech on the picket line. Next,
we'll we're a pro worker. We're pro worker
for sure. So we've got the Worker Privacy Act. It makes it so it makes it easier for employers to withhold information about their employees from unions that are organizing.
Saw that.
Typically, you can get a list of employees. And then you know how big the bargaining unit is. Now employers will be able to withhold that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And in the election, just say, oh, well, you didn't include these 20 people in the bargaining unit, so you didn't get your 2/3.
Yes.
It creates just sort of another out in the election process.
It's just another example of stacking the deck against unions.
Right.
They're trying to organize workers with one hand tied behind their back.
You have the NLRB Stability Act. Now, that sounds good considering that right now the NLRB is about the most unstable, non-existent body within the federal government. Basically, it would ban NLRB decisions from conflicting with federal decisions in whatever federal circuit court.
Oh, okay. I did read about this one. Yes.
So, like, if the NLRB finds that an employer did something and that was illegal, that employer could just go, well, here's a case from 20 years ago against somebody, and they didn't find that. So now the NLRB can't rule that way.
It's neutering the NLRB.
It takes everything and puts it in court and basically gives, 200 years of history for employers to get out of whatever kind of consequences for.
Right. Well, this might be a moot point anyways once it's deemed unconstitutional by our conservative Supreme Court.
Right. And then
they want to attack it from both ways.
The final
legislatively one, and through the courts.
And the final one is the Union Members' Right to Know Act. And essentially what this is it requires union members. There are a number of ways. There are laws that say that if you have religious objections to being in a union, you don't have to be a member, but you have to pay for your representation. If you don't support the political leanings of your union, you can opt out of those fees, but you still have to pay for your representation. And what this requires is for all unions to put on the homepage of their website the steps that are required to get out of paying for your union. It's essentially like saying,
this is basically the genesis of the Janus decision.
Yeah. And it would be akin to saying, hey, all businesses have to post on their websites, here's how to file a lawsuit against us.
Yes.
And here's what you say if you want to, get a bunch of money back from us.
Right. Here's how to be a free rider.
Yeah, exactly. So it's the government putting their finger on the scales against unions.
Yes.
Some people might be for that, but as we say on the show all the time, unions have been shown time and time again to be the best vehicle for lifting people out of poverty and into the middle class.
Without question.
So, that's a rundown. That's our deep dive of this Sunday. And a reminder that if you see laws that have, like the Big Beautiful Bill, it was big. It might not be that beautiful.
No.
And that goes for anything in Congress.
There's some ugliness rearing its head underneath.
But the moves against unions they're underway in Washington. These are preliminary. We'll see where they go. But this just came out in the past week, so we wanted to run through it.
Yeah, and this is why, you know, when we get into political discussions, it's like we're just stating the facts here, right? Yeah. Like, these are bills that are introduced. You know, on the Democratic side, there's been the PRO Act, which basically takes all those bills that were just introduced and takes the exact opposite position on them.
Absolutely. All right, we got to take a break, so we'll be back with more Workers' Mike right here on WGN after this.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Workers' Mike. More show to come, sponsored by Hinge Health. Hinge Health specializes in personalized digital exercise therapy designed for hardworking people, just like you. It's pain relief without waiting rooms and costly medications. Visit hingehealth.com today. Now, back to the show.
You're listening to The Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back to The Workers' Mic, everybody, right here on 720 WGN. I'm Ed Maher here with Phil Davidson. Before the break, we did a run-through of some bills that are moving. I don't know if they're moving through Washington, but they were introduced in Congress over the past week that are really negative toward unions, negative toward workers, tip the scales in favor of employers over employees. But that's not always the case. So we wanted, you know, Phil, you have a good example of some bipartisan legislation that is good for workers. So why don't we touch on that? And then, listeners, we promise we'll be done with politics for the week.
Yes, we will. But it's important. It kind of goes hand in hand with what we
Absolutely.
Do.
Absolutely.
Senator Josh Hawley, who we talk about on the show quite often, I think, now. Yeah. But it's such a good example of someone who's seeing what's happening to American workers and changing his positions. Because at one point, he's a senator from the state of Missouri. He was a supporter of right to work.
Yeah.
And then he saw how Missouri, which is constantly under threat to become a right to work state, it's a red state. Republicans in leadership there would like to see those changes made and give power back to businesses in the corporate America. But he realized that this is not a winning issue. He saw that his constituents, the people of Missouri, in referendum after referendum have voted against right to work. So he's saying, all right,
I'm going to represent my people.
I'm going to represent my people. I'm going to do my job. And so he introduced a bill earlier in this session. It's still waiting for action on the House, on the Senate floor, but it's out there, and it's the Faster Labor Contracts Act,
I'm not mistaken, he co-sponsored it with Cory Booker.
Cory Booker's one of them. Yeah, this is a great example. Hey, we can actually have bipartisan legislation.
Yeah.
Go figure.
How about
it? It's been a while. But basically, this is kind of really gets to the teeth of everything that we talk about on the show, and how, yes, it's great to have a union election, but once you get that a union election, you got to take that next step and be recognized and have an actual collective bargaining agreement.
Get to a contract.
You got to get to a contract with your employer, because if you just have a union formed and you don't have a contract,
you ain't got much.
You're halfway there. But basically, this one would make it easier and faster for unions to negotiate collective bargaining agreements. And basically, under this proposed law, if there's no activity after a union election, it would immediately go to mediation between the employer and the bargaining unit after 90 days.
Yeah.
Which is what we talk about all the time, because as we say, you're going to see union elections all the time. We see what's happening with Starbucks, with Amazon. There's big wins. It generates headlines. But then they'll go years, sometimes never, before they even get a contract, because there's so many opportunities for the employer to delay that process.
Yeah, I mean, Starbucks, for a lot of the early ones that organized, I think they're at 4 years.
4 years.
No contract.
Right.
And after 4 years, if you're Starbucks, you're just like, I mean, what's this union done
exactly
for you? Nothing.
Nothing.
We're not giving you raises.
It loses all momentum. You're like, well, we were all fired up about it, but now, as you said, it's been 4 years now. They keep Starbucks as a way to, you know, counteract the union activity. Yeah. They're giving me a little bit of a raise. Now it's harder for me to really think that I want to put my neck out on the line. And and people will regress and they just get complacent and nothing happens with it. And that's the goal of the employer here. But this would say, no, after 90 days, it's going to go to a mediator and it's going to get decided, and both sides can present their case And this is great, and we would love to see something like this happen.
We've got calls into Senator Hawley and Senator Booker's offices trying to get them on the show, so
right.
We're just waiting for that.
But the point being that all those doomsday scenarios we laid out in the previous segment, there are people who are fighting the good fight on behalf of workers. We just wish it was more of them, and we wish people who are currently in power in both the House and the Senate would also, you know, be aware of this and take that under advisement when they're introducing anti-worker bills.
When workers have more money in their pockets, I mean all workers, there's a stronger middle class. America just does better. The economy is better. And I feel like, you know, I saw some news that this past week that foreclosures are up 20% over last year. The average age of a home buyer is now almost 60 years old.
Oof.
Yeah, in 2010 it was 39.
Wow.
So, I mean, people don't have enough disposable income, and I just can't help but think that we're going to find out what the results of that are before
long.
But
what about the 50-year mortgage plan?
I will tell you what. You know who should be in favor of that? Banks.
Yeah, banks are going to love it.
Because that is I looked into this because I'm like, would this get people to be able to buy homes more easily? Certainly mortgage payments would go down by between 5 and 10%. That's how much. A
couple hundred bucks, maybe.
If that.
Yes.
But yeah, on a 50-year mortgage, for a home that's $375,000, if you have a 50-year mortgage, in 30 years, you're going to pay $820,000 for that house, which is already insane. That's like the system we have today.
Paying more than double.
At 6% interest, which is where we're at. $800,000. If it was a 50-year mortgage, you're paying $1.2 million.
Oh, my Lord.
So you're not – I don't see how it makes homes more affordable. It just makes it take long. I don't know. You're like willing your house to your children.
You will never truly own your home.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just like, let's just everybody rent their houses, I guess.
Yeah.
Because that's what it would
be. I mean, if we're going to do 50, let's do 100-year mortgages.
That's a good point. I'd like to buy a car on like a 100-year loan. I would go out and buy a Ferrari right after the show. I can afford it. I got 100 years to pay for it.
Yeah. That's not the answer. The answer is more building.
Yeah.
Let's get that going.
For sure. But a couple other things were going on this week. We've been talking a little bit about this Starbucks strike, which they started this week on Red Cup Day.
Yes.
And I just figured out what Red Cup Day is. They have like red plastic cups that they give out. It's a reusable cup. I don't know about your house, Phil. I'm trying to get rid of things in my house. My house, I've got a bunch of kids, and they have lots of cups and lots of stuff, and it's everywhere, and I'm just trying to get rid of it. So the last thing I need is more red cups.
I hear you, man. There's nothing I enjoy more than a stealthy toy throwaway operation.
Oh, in the middle of the night?
It's the best.
Yeah, they never even notice. But yeah, Starbucks, their workers are on strike, I think, in 40 cities across the country.
Yeah.
So that's... It's a big deal. They
including here. Enough.
Yeah, and they are just saying, like, you know, this has been 4 years, and let's work toward an agreement. And so we, you know, we'll be keeping an eye on the Starbucks strike because that's a big deal. In the meantime, if you've got any other coffee places in your neighborhood that are, like, locally owned, check them out.
Yes. Because
maybe your money can go to better use in those places. Air traffic controllers are back in the seat. Thanks to the reopening of the government. And the ones who didn't take any time off, I guess, are going to be getting $10,000 bonuses. Now, I mean, I'm in favor of bonuses, and I mean, that's good for all the people that showed up. But the hostility toward TSA and air traffic controllers that didn't show up, you can't be that upset with them.
No.
And
Were any of them automatically furloughed or no?
I don't think they were furloughed. They had to continue coming to work.
They had to.
It was just the sort of age-old agreement that you come to work and we'll pay you like whenever the government reopens,
yes.
Which you're still asking people. I mean, they had collection baskets. They were advising travelers to tip their TSA people with like Starbucks gift cards and grocery gift cards, which I think is a conflict of interest for people that are supposed to be checking your bags.
Total.
But, you know, that's a whole other thing.
Yeah, we'll look the other way here.
Completely insane. But they're back, and the folks who are being told, like, you took time off, you're not being patriotic, you're not standing with America, let's think about what these people were doing. They were showing up to work for, say, air traffic control, one of the hardest, most stressful jobs there is, not being paid.
Arguably the most vital job there is.
Yeah, yes. Well, we found that out, yeah. And the And the whole time in the first, say, month of the strike, they keep hearing on the news, well, we might not pay back pay. We might not. We'll pay some of these people, the ones we like.
Yes.
So, like, if that's what you're hearing, if you're showing up to work and not getting paid, and your, let's call them, your boss is saying, we might not pay you after all, you can't really call somebody unpatriotic if they just say, I'm staying home today. I'm taking the day off work.
That's their right.
Yeah, but they are back, and I'm hoping that this that some of this, you know, turmoil in the airports unwinds. I'll find out later today because I'm going to be flying up to Minneapolis, so I'll report back. But I'm planning on getting to the airport even more obnoxiously early than I already do, just in case there are delays. I don't know about you, Phil, but
I have a connecting flight next week where I have about a 45-minute window. I'm a little nervous about it.
You're not gonna make it. No. Yeah, it's.
Should have thought about that before I booked this one.
I show up annoyingly early for flights, even like little, you know, flights to Minnesota.
Oh, you're one of those guys.
Okay. I swear I would never be that guy, but my dad did it, and I always
3 hours.
It. Oh yeah. Okay. I mean, my dad was always like, there could be a train, and if you're not there 2 hours at the gate, 2 hours before the flight, they can give your ticket away, which. You know, he really thought that was true.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I'm never going to be this guy. I'm that guy. I am absolutely that guy. So I'll be even more obnoxiously early.
I abuse my privilege of living so close to O'Hare.
Yeah, you could just walk to the airport.
Pretty much, yeah.
If they let you, like, hop a fence and didn't get so serious about it.
If I had a badge, yeah, I could probably get right in there.
You got to get you a badge.
I know.
If there's any listeners that know how to get Phil a badge,
give
me a
badged
call.
In.
Yeah, and then he'll travel more and his mom will really think that he is missing.
Wonder where I am.
Or, you know, God knows what. The unemployment, during the shutdown, there was, you know, they shut down the BLS, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, which puts out
all
of
the... Yeah, we're not getting a lot of stats these days.
Right. I mean, the Federal Reserve, for example, they you know, move interest rates and things like that based on how employment is looking, how inflation is looking. And the government this week said that the employment numbers for October will just never be released. They are not coming out. They are not going to be released. And I mean, I have to think that if the numbers were good, they would probably put them out. Don't be a cynic. I know the whole government was shut down, so there's really no way the numbers could have been good. But
no.
But you know, when the numbers were bad a couple months ago.
But do you even trust them anymore?
And they fired the guy, and then they said, we're going to put out the numbers.
Exactly.
First time.
Yes.
First time, it's like, we're not going to put these numbers out. So I don't know.
Because you have to be a loyalist to have any position of authority in this current administration. So.
Now who's the cynic, Phil?
Well, I mean, that's been documented.
Yeah. And then, let's see, there was Walgreens. They got bought by private equity. We talked a little bit last week about what happens with private equity. It tends to be not a great experience for customers
workers.
Or employees. It's sort of all is just finding every place to squeeze a penny out to pay back to the investors.
I've heard it be described as vampire squids.
Yeah, I think I remember that.
Yeah.
So Walgreens actually got bought not too long ago by... a private equity group called Sycamore Partners. And
is Walgreens struggling? I haven't understood
Walgreens, I think in like the last 2 years, their stock price has gone down like 85%. Walgreens is hurting. And I don't
necessarily
know
why. How are you
hurting
when you're selling pharmaceuticals?
I think because you're selling them on every single corner, and on the other corner across from you is CVS. Like there's within, from my house, I have between Walgreens and CVS, I would say that I could drive to 6 locations within 5 minutes.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Maybe it's a little bit much. Yeah. I don't know. But
oversaturation.
But basically what they're going to do, they've closed a bunch of locations, but they're also getting rid of holiday pay. So for employees who didn't work on the holiday, they got paid for Christmas and Thanksgiving. And then if you worked, there was some bonus pay if you had to work on Christmas. So they're doing away with holiday pay. You can work if you're scheduled. If not, you're not getting paid.
You're not getting paid for Christmas.
Yeah. So, I mean, imagine if you work at Walgreens. If you're a pharmacist who works at Walgreens who, your store is closed on Christmas or the pharmacy is closed on Christmas and you used to get something, now you're just not getting that anymore. I don't know. I mean, new ownership and you just see stuff like that, like Christmas pay, Thanksgiving pay.
I mean, you don't want to see that happen to anyone. Maybe I'd be a little bit more understanding if it was some small mom and pop shop operation, but the largest, one of the largest drugstore chains in America can't afford to pay people on a holiday.
We here at Sycamore Partners are, you know, we're a family, yeah, and we just can't afford it. Oh, our returns have only been like 30% this year.
Yeah, no, let's keep an eye on how much they cash out when they spin it off, because private equity is always changing hands.
Yeah.
There will be millions of dollars that they acquire in this deal.
So in protest to this Walgreens move, I have decided that I'm going to stop taking all my medicine. So tune in next week for what's sure to be a really crazy show.
I'm into it.
Undiagnosed Ed, we're going to say. It'll be like,
what medicine are you on currently?
I'm not telling you that on the radio. Come on, man. But let's take a quick break. We've got a little bit more to get to, but we've got some messages from our sponsors, and we'll be back right after this with more Workers' Mike on 720 WGN.
You're listening to The Workers' Mike, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premis Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Workers' Mike right here on 720 WGN. Ed Maher here with Phil Davidson. We're rounding out the show here. One thing that I saw this week that it just made me laugh was there was a video in Moscow. They had this big convention of like Russian technology, and they rolled out their, you know, those robots, like the Boston Dynamics robots that they always show that can like jump and play basketball and do parkour. Sure. Now. So Russia rolls out their version, and they got these two Russian guys walking out behind it, and they look a little nervous, and I noticed that right away, and then the robot falls over. It takes like four steps, falls face first on the stage, and just like parts are flying off of it, and it was great. So I was like, you know, this show we talk a little bit about being scared of AI, mostly for worker reasons, except for you, Phil, where you're having nightmares about, you know, Terminator 2.
Dystopian future.
So at least the Russian robots are not working, which I'd feel better about if they weren't sitting on top of like 2,500 nukes over there and a guy who clearly likes to fight.
The largest nuclear stockpile in the world, I believe, right?
For sure.
Yes.
Yeah, and those things are getting old and rusty too. Yeah. So I hope their technical prowess with those things is still pretty good.
Yeah, that's a bit of a fail if you're introducing your new AI robots and after taking one step, they explode.
It's just like, did you guys test this? I mean, I've had bosses where like AV stuff didn't work or something didn't work, and they just look at you and they're like, did you test this? And you're like, I sure did, and I tested it five times and it worked perfectly every time except when it was in front of a bunch of people.
Was it a trade show type thing they were doing?
It was just like an unveiling technology thing. This was a big deal. This was their big moment, and the thing just fell over, and it's hilarious.
The 2.0 model is going to be great, though. You got to see it.
It's going to drink vodka.
That's their thing, yes.
Yeah, robots thing, that is. So you had some big news over at the Carpenters.
Yeah, so I want to give a little shout out to a couple colleagues. One of our former vice presidents, Wade Beasley, as reported last week in some of the local publications, was just promoted to chief of staff for the United Brotherhood of Carpenters. The
nice. So you got some Chicago leadership headed up to the international.
Chicago leadership going that way. So
that's great.
Congrats to Wade. And congrats to another member of our leadership team, Tony Guida, who Ed knows. He was just named to the Illinois State AFL-CIO Executive Board.
That's awesome. Congratulations, Tony.
Congrats, Tony.
I always love it when we have, folks from the Chicago labor movement that are moving up in, almost all the internationals, there's probably a couple that aren't, but almost all of them are based in Washington, D.C.
Correct.
And they pull their staff from local unions throughout the country. I love seeing Chicago people moving over to Washington because the Chicago labor movement, is really strong. And as it is around
the
Midwest.
It's a birthplace, man.
Yeah, all over the Midwest. Missouri's got a great labor movement. And you look at places like New York that you would think like solid, you know, construction in Manhattan would be all union. It's like 50% in a lot of trades. The same on the West Coast for many trades. Certainly not all.
That Hudson Yards project, like $4 billion project, was built primarily non-union in New York. Yeah, it's not great.
So that's awesome to see Chicago people move.
I mean, when you think unions, you think Chicago.
I certainly do.
First place you go to.
Yeah, we've got it really kind of figured out here.
Yes.
And it works for building trades members. They make a lot of money here, and they're pretty well taken care of. So it's good to see that mentality headed to Washington.
Absolutely.
And then there's one other thing that I wanted to get to. WGN listeners, loyal listeners, you will certainly know that earlier this week was Steve Bertrand's last show. He retired. I think he had 40 years. of you know, of service to WGN.
What a run.
Yeah, how about it? So to really make this tribute to Steve fitting, I think it's important to bring in somebody who worked with him a lot. And that is our producer, Ashley Byhun, here on the Workers Mic. And I really, this is also just a great reason to have you come in the studio and finally talk to us on the air.
We're breaking Ashley. The fourth wall here.
Absolutely. So welcome on. And you know, you had some really kind words to say about Steve Bertrand off the air. So here's your chance, Ashley.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
Finally.
Thanks for everything you do.
It only took 5 years.
Yeah. But no, huge shout out to Steve Bertrand. He's been with us for 40 years, so he's finally retiring.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
He's been hemming and hawing for years, actually, about it. So yeah. When he finally told us that he was retiring, it was bittersweet because we've had him for 40 years. Our listeners have been listening to his voice for 40 years. I've worked with him for about 7.5 of them. So just to be a part of his, you know,
orbit.
Journey. Yeah. It's pretty incredible, and we wish him the best. And I know he's going to be traveling, and he'll still be participating on our airwaves. So...
And listening to the Workers Mark?
Yeah. Absolutely. I assume that he's a listener because he probably heard it as he walked through the hallways here at WGN.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
but,
yeah.
But congratulations, Steve. And Ashley, so you worked here for 7.5 years?
7 and 7 months, something like that.
Not that you're keeping track or anything.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but
the glue that holds this place together.
You really are, Ashley. We want to thank you, Phil and I, because you make us sound even smarter than we already are. And I mean, that level of intelligence is considerable.
Which is no easy task.
Yeah, this show would be on fire without you working the boards back there. So we appreciate everything you do here on the Workers' Mic.
Of course. Do you guys think you'll be here 40 years from now?
I don't know if I'm going to be anywhere 40 years.
I'll be here.
I lived pretty hard strong. My first like 25 years of my life. I got to be very honest with you.
People don't retire until their 80s anymore. Don't you remember that? Yes.
People can't retire until their 80s, I think is
right.
What you meant. Yeah.
Yes.
But yeah, that's the show. Thank you, Phil. Thank you, Ashley. We'll be back next week with Ken. So thanks for listening with us, and we'll be back next week with more Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
The preceding episode of the Workers' Mic was powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare. For additional information and podcasts of the Workers' Mic, visit WGNradio.com.